Mel's not here with us now, guys. We did the Mel clip already. So, all right, listen, we did interview Mel Gibson. We pre-recorded that segment because we figured the whole live chat would just be questions about The Passion and questions about Francis. So we did the Hacksaw Ridge pre-game interview with Mel before we came up. It was mainly Father Nick's interviewing Mel Gibson, and it was just a very interesting conversation as a preamble to do this discussion. So what's up, boys? How you been?
No, it was more than a clip. We got 25 minutes in.
Yeah, yeah, good 25 minutes of conversation with Mel.
And we wanted to keep the clips of the movie separate in case we get any copyright issues with YouTube. The interview with Mel will still be golden. So,
and that's being released tomorrow. Just people already think this is an April Fool's, an early April Fool's or whatever. No, this is, we're releasing 25 minutes with him tomorrow, and pretty vulnerable conversation items.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Father Nick shared some personal stuff. I wasn't expecting that.
I didn't expect Mel to either, but yeah.
Yeah. It was good stuff.
Yeah, so we basically left off with him. We were about to start playing clips of the movie, and he had to fly. So we were like, all right, let's just jump on and let's get into the clip. So Hacksaw Ridge, movie came out in 2016. And the movie that the main concept I got from the movie was conscience, right? I mean, that's you know, standing conviction. Your ground on your conscience, conviction.
Yeah.
Because it was a weird movie. It's when it comes to, like, they're playing with these weird themes where it's he won't touch a gun at all. And you're like, but that's not really a Catholic thing, right? Like, Catholics are allowed to have self-defense and stuff like that. But it becomes kind of clear later on why he makes this vow to God where he won't touch a gun. So we were going to start off with a clip early on in the movie that kind of sets the stage. Where
can I give a quick explanation to the movie? Because we didn't really give people a ton of time to prep for it. We kind of joked, maybe we get Mel on it. You should watch Hacksaw Ridge. People probably didn't think Mel would come, so I don't know how many people who hadn't seen Hacksaw Ridge saw it, but probably most people have. But for the few who haven't, it's a 2016 movie about Desmond Doss. He was a conscientious objector, combat medic in World War II, Pacific Theater, saved 75 men on the battlefield, even without having touched a weapon, goes in the middle of flying bullets and missiles and drags men off the battlefield, saves their lives. And these are the same men who in boot camp were trying to kill him for being a conscientious objector, a pacifist. So we had a good talk with Mel about, like, why are four traditional Catholics discussing a pacifist? We didn't get in the clips, as Anthony said, but again, this was a 2016 movie. It came out before all the medical mandates. So we did have a short discussion on really how this topic of conscience and conviction played into what we would need in 2020. But again, he's a combat medic who saved 75 people, and the whole movie, except for one quick scene at the beginning, he will not touch a weapon.
Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, Hacksaw Ridge was at the Battle of Okinawa. So, okay, well, we ready for the clip then?
Yep.
Okay. So this is as he's a child with his brother.
You better stop it like once every 30 seconds or so.
Oh, we are live.
Stop it. Yeah. Do you hear me? What are they fighting about?
Now, when they ever need a reason.
So just to stop it, but also give a little context. Their father, played by Hugo Weaving, is a World War I veteran and clearly has, like, post-traumatic stress issues from that. So that plays a lot into the movie.
Why stop him? Save me whipping them both. This way I just whip the one that wins.
Tom! Tom! Wake up. Can you hear me?
What the hell have you done?
You can't hear
me. Yeah, I'll pause it again. So that this scene is so pivotal because it's like a life-altering moment for him. People have these moments in their lives where it's just they're something so striking to them that it kind of sets the tone for the rest of their life.
At this point, I thought he might have actually killed his brother.
I did too.
me. Look at some eyes.
I'm going to actually, the next like minute is them worrying about the brother. So I'm going
to
skip.
Yeah, you want to bring it to right where he's looking there.
So you'll see him look specifically at Cain and Abel.
What you doing? I want to have to beat you now. You know the rules.
Are you slowing it down, or is that actually...
That's the movie.
That's how it's
played? Tom, stop. What's that going to teach the boy? He's violent enough already.
Okay, fine. You go smother him in kisses. You tell him the world's a soft and gentle place.
That part kind of speaks to what you and Mel were talking about, Father.
Yeah.
Mothers being the more nurturing one and fathers being more distant, not as distant, obviously, as the father is here, but...
Mm-hmm. This is a funny line. It reminds me of Anthony and Rob fighting.
I don't get hit with the brick.
Yeah. If we were in person, though, you never know.
Al's going to be okay. Hey. I could have killed him.
Yes, you could have.
Murder, it's the worst sin of all. And to take another man's life, that is the most egregious sin in the Lord's sight. Nothing hurts his heart so much.
Father.
Except idolatry, just... like Pacamama.
I was going to say, is murder actually the worst sin, or are there
no idolatry? First commandment sins are the worst.
Would sacrilege and blasphemy be included under that?
Yes, blasphemy is probably second commandment, but idolatry, like we've been seeing in Rome, is first commandment.
Yeah, this is I'm seeing comments, which is why we didn't do a live stream.
Yeah. Yeah. To Mecca, you continue with that.
Like you guys, we can't have nice things.
What's the pushback already? I can't see.
No, it's about personal things with Mel.
Oh,
the worst sin of them all was watching Avoiding Babylon.
Only if you make us out to be idols, I guess. Don't do that. So anything else about this scene before we go to the next one?
No, I just thought it was important to show because it's a very pivotal moment in his life, right? Because the movie is kind of, it's as you're going through it, you're like, why is he such a pacifist? And I don't think Seventh-day Adventists in general are pacifists. I think he in himself just put it, you know, he just had this conviction. He was afraid of the violence that could rise up in his own heart after seeing how he hurt his brother.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, Chris, this is live. This is live. We just interviewed Mel Gibson. We're going to air that interview tomorrow. We figured we would speak about the movie tonight and then air the interview tomorrow.
Now, the next scene, we could either go chronologically in the movie or kind of chronologically story-wise. So I'm thinking either the next scene chronologically in the movie would be the court-martial, but I think to get a sense of why he feels so strongly, I should show the next scene with his dad.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, let me just fast forward here. Right here. I know it's dark, so it's going to be hard to see, guys, but...
It won't bite.
Yeah, well...
Talking about a rifle.
Look around you.
After what we just been through, any sane man would be screaming for a weapon.
Well, I never claimed to be sane.
Oh, I missed that. Hold on. It's later. Here we go.
My daddy used to beat me and my brother just because the sun rose and then whip us just because it set. I could take that. But when he would do it to our mama.
Get away from me, woman!
Dad,
That's enough! No more!
No!
Do you hear me?
Pull that damn trigger!
Stop it! Stop!
The guy from The Matrix is really good in this.
Yes, he is.
Everybody's calling him Elrond. I forgot he was Elrond.
And in the... Oh, you just said The Matrix. Yeah, sorry.
That's what I know him as. He'll always be the villain from The Matrix.
Yeah, Mr. Anderson.
Margo is right. We're going to release this on Locals as soon as it's edited. So you guys will see it on Locals before we put it up on YouTube.
Like tonight?
If we get, as soon as it's edited, it'll be up on Locals. So the Mel Gibson interview will be on our Locals as soon as it's edited. And then tomorrow at 7 p.m., it'll go live on YouTube. So if you guys want to see it early, join our Locals and you will see it early. Thank you, Margo.
So yeah, to me, the whole driving force of the movie is right there when he said that he killed his father in his heart. Like, that seems to set everything up.
Yeah, and it's a powerful scene too, right? Because I was just saying, like, his issue with the gun isn't that it's in principle wrong, because he's fighting alongside these other men that are shooting. His issue is that he sees of violence capable within himself. And he says, I don't know if we played the part where he says, I had already murdered him in my heart. Like, he really did see where Christ elevates the commandment, right? The commandment is thou shalt not kill. But Christ says, if you have hated a man in your heart, you've already committed murder. Like, you really see that sets in his heart.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the next scene is, so he gets court-martialed for refusing a direct order. This is still in basic. He gets court-martialed, so this scene is at the court-martial, and I'm going to play the clip where Desmond gives his reason, his side of it, basically.
Yeah, in the Mel interview, I wanted to bring up, when you guys were talking about the fathers, I wanted to bring up how, because Mel had mentioned that he reconciled with his father. And I wanted to mention how in the movie, there's almost a reconciliation between the father and son when the father goes into court and barges in and stands up for his son.
Mm, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I don't have that part, but we could play that part too. If you
want. Guys are going to see tomorrow. I was trying to reel y'all into the conversation.
I don't know about that. You guys are going to see a subdued Anthony holding his tongue is what you're going to see. Me wanting to.
I thought. Remember the conch in The Lord of the Flies? I have the conch. I kept trying to pass the conch to you guys.
That book does not turn out so well. So
no, but only the person with the shell gets to actually talk. So. Yeah. Kept trying thank to
you,
transfer.
Thank it. You, Tobias. Very much appreciated. Yeah, guys. Like, I mean, we don't make anything doing this show. It's like the couple bucks help us keep the lights on. So if you can.
Margo. Yes, Anthony was quiet.
Anthony was very quiet during this. It's a very, very different side of Anthony, you will see.
We're not the ones that know Mel.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, especially me, anyone who watches the show knows that the first and second time we interview a person, I'm pretty quiet. But by like the third or fourth time we have the same person on, I finally get comfortable.
Yeah.
And full disclosure, I did ask for the first couple of questions, but I thought once I switched to the medical mandate, you guys were going to take over. I thought it was a really deep, great interview. I just thought, I kind of wish you guys had talked more, but probably the only time I'll be saying that about Anthony. For the next
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Margo, we could not be more grateful. You got Mel Gibson on our channel. You could have done that for your channel and just brought him on your channel and just done an interview between him and you. You were kind enough to bring it over to our channel. We are very, very grateful. I did get questions, and I'm not at all saying I didn't get questions. And it was something very, very selfless of you to do that for our channel instead of just, I mean, you asked the guy for an interview. You could have just brought it on your channel. I mean, it's Mel Gibson. So we're very, very.
Yeah, and like I think I said to you guys in the green room, people always ask me for his phone number. I don't give it, but because you guys have me on the show every month and you never ask for anything, I thought, hey, this would be great. So him and I were talking on the phone last week, and I just brought it up. I actually don't even think I called him for that. And I said, hey, we have this Faith in Film series. Amazingly, Mel Gibson had never seen I Confess by Alfred Hitchcock. I couldn't believe it.
You know what and I would so love I said, to ask him? I wanted to ask him, does he still have like passion for seeing movies? Because as a director, you kind of like behind the scenes seeing the sausage made. Like, does it kind of take the thrill of enjoying it? Like, I still get excited for movies. I don't know if an actor or a director still gets that excitement because they kind of know.
Well, when I've asked him for suggestions in the past, you know what kind of movies he tells me to watch?
What?
Black and white
old
movies.
Black and white old movies, yeah. I was surprised he didn't see I Confess.
I was shocked. So Christian Mario said he became Orthodox. Well, that's a lot better than Seventh-day
Adventist. He's just joking, I promise you that. That's just well, him.
You know, the Catechism of Pius X says lies and jest are wrong, but I guess Christian Mario is going to have to move from Orthodoxy to Catholicism to
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're dragging him. We're dragging him to go kiss the baby.
Lies and jest. You know who did become, you know who became Orthodox at the end of his life?
Bob
Eastern
Marley.
Orthodox. What?
Bob Marley.
Exactly. He became Ethiopian Orthodox.
Mm-hmm. Ethiopian Orthodox. I actually just saw something on that the other day.
But valid baptism. And all sacraments.
I just can't believe that whole, not orthodoxy, but the prior Rastafarianism, they think some...
Haile Selassie is the return of Christ.
Haile Selassie.
Right. I'm like, what, you guys believe this nonsense?
Yeah, and Haile Selassie was like a pastor, preacher, and he was like, I am not the return of Christ. It's a very strange thing.
And Bob Marley did renounce Rastafarian and Haile Selassie as that prophet to become Ethiopian Orthodox.
So
we trolled Taylor Marshall.
We did interview Mel. We did it as a pre-record because we were afraid the comments would just be flooded with questions about the Passion and questions about Francis and things like that. So we pre-recorded it. We're going to do a little bit of editing, and then we're going to release the Mel Gibson interview tomorrow.
And Dr. Marshall, we got a full 25 minutes. He gave us a full 25 minutes that's yeah. coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, so... yeah. I was supposed to do a show with Taylor this week, but our schedules didn't line up.
On his show or yours?
I don't know. We were just talking. We both really enjoyed the Dune movie. We both really enjoyed the sequel to Dune, and we were texting about it over the weekend, and he's like, we should just do a show on it. And I was like, all right, let's see if the schedules work out.
Since this is a movie podcast, I did watch Dune 1 on an airplane, which I didn't like, and I said to my brother, he just saw Dune 2 in the theater. I said, I thought Dune 1 was boring. He said, the only movies that are good on an airplane are comedy movies.
Yeah, that's probably true. You got to watch it in the right setting, but the second one, especially seen in IMAX, is an experience at the movie.
We also disappointed Father Ripperger as well.
Oh, sweet. Tell Father Ripperger, hey.
I got bumped by Mel. He says I got bumped by Mel. I told Taylor, I go, listen, I'm busy on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's all I can say. I'm busy on Tuesday and Wednesday.
People still don't believe we got him on Twitter. They think
they'll believe it tomorrow when we release it. That's all.
Yeah. Can we do it a little earlier than 7 p.m.? Maybe noon?
Yeah. Oh, new. I want to be in the chat. I'll be at work. That's why. Yeah, that's the only reason we want to do it in the evening. So, yes, Mel left already. We got about 25 minutes of interview with him. He was incredibly open with us. He shared some personal things, and
it was very vulnerable. Him and I shared things with our own fathers that I don't think anyone's ever going to or anyone's seen on Mel Gibson's public interviews. It was pretty deep, vulnerable conversation. Vulnerable is kind of an overused word in the neocon world today, but it was.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and I've said it before, but everyone we talk to, you know, whether they're big names like Mel Gibson or even Dr. Marshall, or you know, just everyone we've talked to, you that first time, you know, they're this big name, and you're nervous, and then you talk to them, and it's like they're a normal, humble person. Yeah, at least everyone we've talked to has been incredibly gracious and humble, including Mel Gibson.
Yeah. Yeah, that's normal. Right. Very normal. Yeah, and Taylor said he's with Father Ripperger. Father Ripperger actually has a very childlike heart.
Hey, Taylor, ask Father Ripperger when he's coming on. He would love to have a conversation with him. All right, let's go to the next clip.
Okay, so this is, like I said, this is the court-martial scene where you kind of hear Desmond's thoughts on why he wants to be a combat medic without carrying a weapon.
You're fixing to bury him.
There is only one question that any military court need ask of the accused. Do you deny disobeying Colonel Sangston's direct orders?
Well, do you, Private?
No, sir, I don't.
Why are you contesting it, then? Why is it so important to you, given your refusal to even touch a weapon, to serve in a combat unit?
So it should be noted that they've even, at this point, offered him the ability to serve in a combat unit as a medic, not have to carry the weapon in the field, but they say he has to qualify with the weapon in basic. That basically he's got to touch it the one time, and then that's it. And he is still refusing to do so.
What's interesting about this movie is Andrew Garfield did this movie and Silence back to back. And this movie is about standing on your conviction, and Silence is about like folding on your convictions. And they're both very faith related, right? So Andrew Garfield really, and I would say he does a better job of acting in Silence just because it's a more deep movie. But you see Martin Scorsese, just the difference in Mel Gibson's faith and Martin Scorsese's faith, right? So it's like Mel is really building up how important conviction is, where Martin Scorsese is kind of making the excuse of, folding on your convictions, you could still slide through. And he has this little cross at the end of Silence to kind of justify him. That could have been such a beautiful movie about a martyr, and he changed it to a man who folded on his conviction.
It's all about compromise or not.
Do you know why I won't watch Silence? Because if I'm ever tortured for Christ, I don't want that scene in my mind of somehow I can have a pass to make an excuse and deny our Lord. I won't watch it.
Yeah. It stinks, because the first 80% of that movie is some of the most beautiful Catholic imagery you'll ever see in your life.
And, you know, really Father Isaac, who you've had on this show, he got me into a book by St. Alphonsus Liguori called Victories of the Martyrs. The first half is the Roman Empire. The second half is the Japanese martyrs. And Father Isaac said to me a couple of times, his favorite part of the whole book is the second half. So if you have scores and scores and scores of some of the most heroic martyrs in the history of the church in Japan, why in the world would you make it of one of the very few who apostatized, when you have thousands of our most heroic martyrs who didn't apostatize, right? That's another reason I won't watch the movie, is it makes it look like maybe 50% of the Japanese cracked under torture for Christ and the other half didn't.
The sad part is it's a fictional story. It's not even a real story. It's a novel that was written, and I don't understand the purpose of Martin's
fiction a little bit.
Well, it's definitely historical fiction, but Martin Scorsese's always playing with the faith in weird ways, man. It started with him doing The Last Temptation of Christ, and he's got all sorts of blasphemous stuff going on. When I posted Silence Was Subversive on Twitter, I got dunked on by so many people claiming it's not a based movie at all. No way.
I'm with you. No, it's a problem. I mean, you had Japanese martyrs getting lowered into yellow volcanoes. Father Isaac, I haven't made it this far in the book, but some dad is getting killed, and they would apparently put on their best clothes when they would come, when the emperor's men would come and kill the Christians. And this like 8-year-old kid came out from hiding and in his best clothes and declared in front of the emperor's men, he also is a Catholic. He wants to die with his dad. And they graciously obliged him.
Yeah.
8-year-old. I mean, these are some of the greatest martyrs in the church. Why make a movie about one of the few cracks?
Because Martin Scorsese has got a distorted understanding of what heroism is.
I won't watch it.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Okay. Here's the rest of the scene.
Because when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, I took it personal. Everyone I knew was on fire to join up, including me. There were two men in my hometown. Declared 4F unfit. They killed themselves because they couldn't serve. Well, I had a job in a defense plant. I could have taken a deferment, but that ain't right. It isn't right that other men should fight and die, that I would just be sitting at home safe. I need to serve.
I think while we watch this, or while you think about this, it's good to think of the events of 2020 and 2021, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, this is like, I forgot how good this movie was, and it was almost prophetic in the things that were about to fall upon us as Americans. And you had the government coming down and forcing their hand on us, telling us we had to do things. And there comes this movie in 2016 about a man who the government's telling me he has to do things. And he's like, I won't do it. I don't care. And that's literally the start of this channel was, I won't do it. I don't care. If I lose everything, I won't do it.
I got the energy and the passion to serve as a medic. Right in the middle with the other guys. No less danger, just while everybody else is taking life, I'm going to be saving it. With the world so set on tearing itself apart, it doesn't seem like such a bad thing to me to want to put a little bit of it back together.
Hmm. Yeah, it's, man. You think about how much the country has changed since that time, right? These young men all want to go off.
Since World War II or since 2016?
Since World War II, especially, right? Mm-hmm. Like this patriotism of people just wanting to throw their lives on the line for their country. I mean, I really don't know, even if we were attacked in a Pearl Harbor type situation, if you'd have that now. They've beaten the patriotism out of their populace.
And it's even gone to the opposite. I mean, people are being trained. People are being trained to hate this country in public schools now.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Man, we're supposed to be ashamed of our heritage.
Yeah. What other clips do we have, Rob?
The one other that I've kind of highlighted and picked out is the scene in the bunker system with the enemy.
Is there any others? A good one. Yeah, because this is even important, right? So this aspect of the movie, like, it's strange because we're talking about a Seventh-day Adventist, and it's like, I don't know. It was a weird movie to watch, especially like my wife was like, what do you do in a situation like this? Because like, you can't say it's sanctity. You can't say it's holiness, but there's something heroic, right? Like, I guess that could be considered a natural virtue, right? I mean, there's something on a natural level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and like we were talking off the air, even St. Augustine admits that the unbaptized have prevenient graces. Seventh-day Adventists, I just happened to look at someone just sent me the Archdiocese of Los Angeles list of which baptisms are valid, and even the modern Archdiocese of Los Angeles holds Seventh-day Adventists to be doubtful. But that's not really the topic. Point is, even if he weren't baptized, we could still hold he was given prevenient graces. So yeah, you can certainly live out fortitude, just not supernatural fortitude, even if you're not baptized. That's the Catholic Church's teaching.
Because they're not really like Trinitarian, right? Like not in the full sense.
I don't know. I don't know if they deny the Trinity, but there's something funky about their there's something funky about how they do the baptism. Thanks, Enoch.
One thing that you said in the interview with Malfather that I think helps anyone who still doubts whether we should be watching a movie that portrays the Seventh-day Adventists in such light or portrays the pacifists in such light, is that you mentioned that that priests are not supposed to carry weapons into battle or anything like that. So that it's not like entirely outside of the realm of Catholicism in a sense for someone like this.
And remember our first Faith and Film series, I mentioned Acts 17:23, that St. Paul talks about a poet in Athens, and he mentions that they have some statue to the unknown God. And so him discussing the art of pagans doesn't make him not a Catholic, right? I mean, he was the apostle. And so we as Catholics it's not barred from us to discuss art that comes from non-Catholics, or apparently you guys are already getting like comments about Mel. And I mean, the thing is, we're not required to sit down with a moral intake or a doctrinal intake to discuss art, you know? Yeah. I mean, and this is where, because things are so dark in modernism, the reaction to that can be to treat traditionalism as a cult. Well, they're discussing someone I disagree with morally, or on the papacy, or they're discussing a Seventh-day Adventist, or they discussed an Eastern Orthodox movie. Get used to it. We're Catholics in the world. And from St. Paul onwards, you're allowed to discuss the art of pagans, non-Catholic Christians, good Catholics, bad Catholics. You know, I mean, the bandwidth of who we're allowed to discuss is
Catholic. Think about St. Thomas Aquinas. He's actually taking all of the things of Aristotle and baptizing them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's taking Aristotle and baptizing it in the Summa.
So people who want to hold an inquisition for us for who we're discussing. Now, if we speak heresy, you should call us out and have a real inquisition. But if we're discussing people you disagree with, that's not going to convict us not to have them on our show.
Yeah. The Island episode that we did, that was an Orthodox movie, but I mean, you're discussing Christian Catholic themes throughout the whole thing, and it led to amazing discussions. So,
yeah, I have more in common with Eastern Orthodox than Novus Ordo Catholics at this point. That's one of those clips the liberals are going to take and love, but
I don't care. Plus, after having a Mel Gibson interview, are you kidding me?
But what'd you say?
After a Mel Gibson interview on top of that, forget it. Yeah, right. You're going to be ostracized.
I'm going to be making a lot of friends and enemies here. I always do.
Well, especially during the Mel Gibson, you talked about how the fellow priest not standing up for you.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, boy. That shouldn't have come out of my mouth either. Oh boy.
Good night. Okay, so I have that clip pulled up here. Once again, I know it's dark. Oh, to give context, I suppose we should. He's up on the ridge by himself. They've pulled everyone else back. He stayed up to save people, to save wounded soldiers. Running, trying to escape the Japanese. I almost called them Japs. Try to escape the Japanese. He ducks into a cave. I know.
He's like, I almost said the word that I'm about to say.
It makes it better somehow, right? He ducks in what he thinks is like a cave, and it turns out to be a bunker system that the Japanese then enter, and he's trying to stay away from them.
It's okay. It's all right. It's okay. Morphine.
This man probably killed 20 of his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like that concept of loving your enemy, right? And doing good for someone who's trying to kill you and your squad. The fact that I've even interviewed on the same channel as Mel Gibson is probably the biggest thing I've accomplished in my 20 years of life. I think it's funny that we got Mel Gibson. We can't get Michael Knowles. It's getting a little annoying.
Margo can take care of that, maybe. Well, you know, Anthony, you and I were talking about this on the phone today, that really you can't, for the most part, you can't expect natural virtue or really anything in a non-Christian culture. And we were talking about how original sin is the most underestimated of really all catechetical topics post-Vatican II. And even though we can't encourage people to go see Apocalypto because there's a lot of nudity in it, Anthony and I agree that is probably our favorite of Mel Gibson's movies. Probably shouldn't have watched it, but the reason we love it is it really shows it wasn't Christian savages showing up to, you know, the noble savages. The fact people are ripping each other's hearts out and then civilization arrives with the Spaniards, I think that's why that might be the most important movie that he made, to show that every culture is absolute such dark. In fact, I heard on Kennedy Hall show a talk by a Father Rion, who's an SSPX priest. And he talked about how the world that John Braboff, St. John Braboff, arrived at in Canada, any, you know, if they were short food, they would eat their own little girls, the Hurons and the Iroquois. If their sled dogs died, they would turn their wives into sled dogs. You know, the world that St. John Braboff and St. Isaac Joe showed up, they studied the language of the Iroquois, the Huron, the Algonquin, or whatever it's called. There wasn't even a word for God in these languages. You know, so this notion that the white man Christians, they only brought blankets, diseases, and hypocritical religion, it's just so absolutely false. And you see that in that scene right here, that Japanese man simply cannot believe that is morphine. He can't believe that there's something that's going to help him, because, and not that we really would expect that too much these days from someone who claims to be Christian either, but it's such a foreign idea outside of Christianity to love your enemy that it's not something we can expect just a noble pagan to believe in. Noble pagans had certain virtues, but celibacy was not one of those. Forgiving your enemies was not one of those. Those are specifically and exclusively Christian virtues.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you get, and that's like Apocalypto is, I know you're saying you probably shouldn't watch it, but it's one of those movies that if you really get an understanding of how alien the pre-Christian world was to what we think of, right? Like you do see that there's a tribe where they do talk about some of the more natural virtues. It's like the father tells the son a story where he's like, this, you know, the two wolves, or whichever one you feed more, it's the, you know, the evil wolf and the good wolf. And but there's some kind of natural virtue there, but there's also this diabolic aspect that is so focused on human sacrifice in that world, you know? So yeah, like you probably shouldn't watch it because there's indigenous nudity in it, but I mean, on some level that's just the way it was, and it's just a realistic depiction. And I mean, it's one of those movies that really made me understand what the missionaries that came to the New World did.
And this isn't just a white and black thing or a white and brown thing. I mean, when the apostles, who were quote unquote brown, showed up to Europe, cannibalism was all over Europe. So the fact is, every culture, regardless of skin color, is cannibals until Christianity arrives there. There's no good people. There are no good people until Christianity arrives. I'm sorry. There's just not. It doesn't matter your skin color. There's cannibalism everywhere until the Catholic Empire, Christendom, the empire of love of Jesus Christ arrives in that land.
And one could argue that could be the very reason why Christ chose to give himself in the manner of the Eucharist, because all these pagan cultures were used to cannibalism, but it wasn't eating God. Right. It was eating each other. So,
Never thought of it that way.
Well, so that's what we had for scenes, unless you guys
have any others.
Yeah.
I think this is a good way to just wrap up, because we have the interview coming out tomorrow. This movie wasn't strictly a Christian film either, right? It was more a movie about conviction and standing your ground on something that means something to you. There was
I was just going to say, and as a warning, I wouldn't, for anyone who hasn't watched this isn't one to watch with young children, probably. Mm. Not because of swearing, or because I don't think there's even any real swearing or taking the
lead. No, there's just a lot of gore.
But it's a realistic, they show realistic war scenes. So,
and you know, even the Catholic movies we pick, there's going to be some problems. Like we're looking at The Mission at the end of this month, and my most unfavorite scene in that movie is when the Jesuits justify the infanticide of some of these Peruvian mountain tribe families. Of course, no 17th century Jesuit would ever justify infanticide, but that's a little bit of this like liberal 1980s Jesuitism being projected back into the 17th century. So even our Catholic movies aren't going to be perfect. If you want us to only review perfect movies, we're going to have to shut down this whole series.
Yeah, I mean, it's
there's only one we could review then, and it'd be The Passion.
The passion, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, the show on the mission is going to be interesting. I invited Dan Burke to join us for that one because Dan Burke and I, before we even were planning this show, had a very interesting back and forth about the mission. So I asked you if you'd mind if I invited him on. And he said he'd love to come on with us. It should be a really – so we're going to have a special guest for that show. And I'm really looking forward to that one because I think even the things that you're saying you found problematic in it will make for very good discussion pieces, I think.
Can I mention real quick before you run, Anthony, now you have to get up early, why I kind of came to the conclusion that if we're going to ask Mel Gibson on to our show, your guys' show rather, which movie? And the reason it was kind of a process of elimination in my mind, then you guys obviously weighed in. The reason I didn't do Braveheart is because I just thought he probably gets a lot of requests on that. At the time we were going to have a live chat, and the reason I thought The Passion wasn't going to be appropriate is because I love how our audience gets really silly in the live chat. That's not really appropriate for The Passion, of course. Mel doesn't want to talk about The Resurrection yet. Totally get it. And then this one just came to my mind as just one of my favorites. I think Anthony had seen it. Rob hadn't seen it. So it was really kind of like a process of elimination. Anthony and I do love Apocalypto. I said I don't want to promote something with nudity. But anyway, that's kind of how we came to the conclusion. Were there a couple other movies that you guys wanted or we approached through the process of elimination? Mel Gibson movies specifically?
With Mel, there's a whole bunch of different roads we could have taken. I would have loved to discuss Apocalypto with him because I think he loves that film. But it was the nudity aspect that was a little troublesome because it was like, how do we tell people to go watch this movie that has, you know, indigenous nudity in it, mm-hmm. stuff like mm-hmm. that. So that was the issue there. But even when you watch The Patriot, it has so much faith intertwined into that movie as well. But he didn't direct that. He just acted in it.
I didn't know that.
Braveheart as well. But like you said, so many people probably talk. He's probably, it's like, again, they're asking me about Braveheart. So it was really, like you said, a process of elimination. This movie really did have the theme of faith running through it, had the theme of standing on your conscience running through it. It was just
you know what would have been a perfect show for you and Mel to discuss, Anthony? What Women Want. There's no way that could go wrong.
No. Me and Mel discussing our misogyny together.
No, because that's the movie he can read women's minds in, right? Or something like that.
I forget. I don't remember if I saw that movie.
They had a few movies of like mind reading movies like that. The other one was like, what was it? Again, we're gonna answer to God if we keep saying, here's a movie we've seen that you shouldn't watch.
Yeah, right.
Remember Shallow Hal?
Shallow Hal, yeah.
Shallow Hal. Again, I would not encourage people, but it is an interesting movie to see that the beauty is on the inside a lot of the time. Bill Mel Anthony's marriage advice video. So I threw hard questions at Mel, and he seemed to appreciate it. I think that a lot of times people just give really shallow questions. Not that I'm some deep person or whatever. I just knew that I could probably throw something kind of hard at him, and he really enjoyed having some hard questions there.
So I don't think it is. I can understand why Father Nix is hesitant to recommend it. He's a priest. He has, you know, I understand that. Seeing indigenous women in that state, there's nothing. It's just a historical reality.
I watched it once. I'm not going to watch it again. I don't want pictures of nude women in my mind. I watched it once.
Right. I understand that.
I'm not going to watch it again.
Yeah, so that's the main issue with it. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to recommend people see it, but I thought it was one of the most amazing movies I'd ever seen.
I did ask Mel once. I said, why did you make that movie? We were texting about it late one night after I had seen it. And he said, to show where the world's going. I said, I thought it was to show how dark pre-Christian world was until Catholicism got there. And he texted back that too. But I think Anthony and I really see it through the eyes of that second, because you, Anthony and Rob and I, we're always thinking globally, like, what did the world look like before Christianity arrived? What is it supposed to look like after Christianity arrived? And all these crazy accusations that Christianity made the world worse, that is the key movie to see that's such a lie.
Yeah, it's so preposterous. The people just take their Christian civilization for granted. They don't know what they don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just the notion, don't murder. No, that's not even something most pagans get.
No, right. Not at all.
Or like you guys have pointed this out before too. I mean, remember what I just said about the, you know, the Iroquois, the Hurons, the Algonquins. I mean, the fact that they would turn their wives into sledding dogs and eat their own little girls if they got cold or hungry. This notion that women had any rights, it's quite foreign to almost any culture. Now, of course, like the BBC and National Geographic will always like show that one little tribe in India that like where women run the show, the women are actually like they run the families. But besides that one feminist culture that was like naturally a feminist culture, which I'm sure is probably also equally unhealthy in its own way, it's always been a history since Adam and Eve of women taking the short end of the stick, women getting raped, beaten everywhere. The Christianity is the only framework in which women have any rights in all of world history. Well,
and there's a little known secret about matrilineal societies that people don't know. So when the left hold up these matrilineal societies as some sort of woke feminist utopias, what they're not telling you is that these societies, so a matrilineal society is when a person tracks their family history through their mother instead of their father. So, you know, you would get your last name from your mother, you know, it was your mother's family and so on and so forth. These societies tracked it through their mothers because they did not know who their fathers were because of how often and how frequently their mothers were raped. That is why these societies are matrilineal. It's not some woke feminist utopia. It's it's barbarity.
And I think even at the more basic level, I mean, you're not Jewish unless your mother's Jewish. And I think the reason that they trace that is just because it's more provable who you're born to. You know, even adultery and rape aside, Jews always consider you're Jewish if your mom's Jewish because that's just the most easy thing to prove of the two.
Yeah, because you know who your mother is. You don't always know exactly who your father is. So listen, I do have to fly. If you guys want to keep chatting, you guys are more than welcome to. I'm just, I got to run.
I got to fly tomorrow too. I better call it a night. Thank you guys very much.
I got to edit the Mel interview.
You got to edit. Yeah.
All right. So Father, thank you so much.
Hey, make a copy because if you delete that, Rob, and we don't have anything to show, people are going to flay us alive out there.
No, it's not going to.
Make a copy before you before you edit that. Can we? Yeah,
definitely.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You want to be in the live chat. thanks for letting me join you guys.
No, thank you for everything, Father. Like, honestly, the series has been really, it's been one of my favorite series. And I can't believe that we got a Mel Gibson interview out of it, man. I hope that inspires other people in that arena that have faith to come on and have conversations with us about film.
Well, and, you know, I love this Faith in Film series too, because it is easy and it's actually necessary to point out issues of the church crisis and fight for church reform. But this is a nice little break for all of us to do that.
Yeah. Get away from the drama.
Yeah. So Mission is next. We have the one on deck and in the hole after that.
Beckett.
That's
Phil,
right.
Phil Gonzalez paid a good amount of money for
Beckett. Yeah. Phil is definitely getting his request. We're doing Beckett after the mission.
And so. It's one of my favorites. So
cool. Yeah. God bless you guys. Right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Yep. Thank you guys. We'll see you guys soon.
Ciao.